I'm Amy Goodman as we return to our conversation with Columbia University professor Mahmoud Mamdani, one of the world's most prominent Africa scholars, speaking about Darfur in relation to other conflicts around the world.
Well, let's begin with the numbers of the dead. Okay. The only group in a position to estimate how many people have died in Darfur is UNICEF, because UNICEF is the only one that did a comprehensive survey in 2005 in Darfur. Everybody else only knows the piece of ground on which they work and will then extrapolate from it, like any other NGO, like Oxfam or Médecins Sans Frontières or World Food Programme. The WFP estimate was 200,000. Out of these 200,000, the WFP report tells you that roughly about 20% died of actually being killed, of violence. And 80% died mainly from starvation and from diseases. And normally, in our understanding of genocide, we put both those together and look at them as a result of the violence, because the violence prevents the medicine going in, etc. Except in the case of Darfur, it's not a single cause situation. Darfur is also the place which has been hit hard by global warming. The UN Commission, which sat on global warming very recently, spoke of Darfur as the first major crisis of global warming. In other words, from the late 1970s, you have had a significant desertification, and you've been having in the north of Darfur basically a situation where people simply, entire livelihoods are destroyed, and which has been one of the elements because it has driven the nomadic population in the north down into the south. So how many people are dying from desertification? How many people are dying from the violence that has been unleashed through this civil war in Darfur? Second element in this is that there's a civil war going on in Darfur. There are two rebel movements, and both rebel movements were born in the aftermath of the peace in the south. And those who were unwilling to accept the peace in the south, who thought the peace in the south should have included a resolution for all of Sudan, particularly for Darfur and not simply for the south, they were the inspiration behind the two movements that developed. One movement, the Sudan Liberation Army, was a movement strongly connected with the SPLA in the south, especially with those sections of the SPLA who were not happy with the partial nature of the settlement in the south. And the other movement,
the SPLA is
the Sudan People's Liberation Army, which had organized and led the guerrilla war in the south for several decades under John Garang. The second movement was the Justice and Equality Movement. The Justice and Equality Movement, unlike the SLA, which is a secular movement, Justice and Equality is an Islamist movement. And it was a break off from the regime in the Sudan. It was a break off between two sections of the regime, the military and the civilian section, and particularly the section led by the chief ideologue, Hassan Turabi, who split from the military wing and was the inspiration behind the formation of the Justice and Equality Movement. So you have, in a way, a very strong Islamist rebel movement, and you have a strong secular rebel movement, and these two began their operations in 2003. The government's response, and I saw the ambassador's response there, which was as disingenuous as Bush's response, in a sense, because he's claiming that it's just a civil war inside. The government has nothing to do with it. It's not true. The government's response was to pick a proxy and arm it. And the government was, in a way, smart enough to pick those who were the worst victims of the desertification and the drought. It picked the poorest of the nomads from the north, whose livelihoods had been entirely destroyed and who had simply no survival strategy at hand, and gave them weapons. And these guys went down south, and their object was not to kill the peasants in the south, but to drive them off their land. The government's response was also to pick a second group, and that second group are the nomads from Chad who have come into Darfur. And to understand that, one has to look at the third dimension of the conflict, which is that over the last 25, 30 years, there's been a civil war going on in Chad. Chad, during the Cold War, was a bone of contention, first and foremost between the US and France, and both had their allies in the region. France allied with Libya, the US allied with the military dictatorship in Sudan, with the Nimeiri dictatorship in Sudan. And every oppositional movement in Chad had a base in Darfur. And they armed themselves, organized themselves in Darfur. So Darfur was awash with weapons for two decades. Okay. And those who ran away from the civil war in Chad came into Darfur. So the other wing of those who were armed, whether by the government or whether this by this weaponry, which was awash, were the Chad refugees in Darfur. So what we call the Janjaweed are two groups. They are the Chad refugees in Darfur, and they are the poorest of the northern camel. Pastoralists divide into two, the camel pastoralists and the cattle pastoralists. And the camel pastoralists, because the camel is the only game which will survive in the worst conditions, where even cattle will not survive, they are the poorest of the poor. So these are what are called the Janjaweed.